Welcome. Today is the 19th of August, 2008. last Saturday we had the eclipse, partial eclipse of the moon. On the 1st we had a total solar eclipse. And we discussed what some of the developments might be due to the eclipse, and we are seeing them now in action, if you've noticed or not. Musharraf stepped down yesterday as, what is he, the president of Pakistan. So what we had suggested was there would be some changes, political changes, and either there'd be an overthrow or a change in leadership, something like this the eclipse would bring. So Musharraf, threatened with impeachment, has stepped down. And Russia invaded Georgia, which might turn out to be a very serious thing. So we'll have to wait and see. But they are threatening Georgia's sovereignty.
Would that be because
independence.
Of the solar eclipse?
Lunar eclipse. No, pardon me, solar eclipse from the first. Lunar eclipse didn't point to that. It was the solar eclipse. Yeah, exactly. So those are some things we may attribute perhaps to the eclipse, solar eclipse. on Saturday, next, is Sri Krishna Janmashtami, which is a very, very holy day in the Indian calendar, one of the holiest days. That is the birthday of Krishna. So that's Krishna there on the far left with Radha, his consort, as we said repeatedly, I don't know how many times. And the Vedic conception of the Godhead, there's no such thing as just the male form of God. It doesn't exist. God always comes with a female counterpart. The male form is called the Shaktiman, one who possesses the energy. And the female is the Shakti, the energetic potency. So both are required. So Krishna is the form of God, and this is the mantras that we chant at the beginning, essentially the form of love and loving reciprocal relationship with God. That's Krishna's lila or pastime. So it's an auspicious day. I mean, you can worship in the Christian calendar, they celebrate Jesus Christ's appearance Christmas time, for example, but they never celebrate God the Father. So Krishna in effect is God the Father. So that's coming Saturday. Next week we'll talk about Krishna in detail, and we'll discuss his birth and appearance and the story of his birth. So I'm going to save that for next week. Also planetarily, on Saturday, Mercury will move forward in the sky from Leo into Virgo. Mercury represents speech, communication, intellect, knowledge, the nerves, the nervous system, stress, and its opposite. Not that Mercury represents stress, but when one is out of balance and the nervous system is under duress, the symptoms one often experiences are worry, fear, nervousness, stress, tension, anxiety, these kinds of things, insomnia, inability to focus, too many thoughts in the mind, mind is overactive. Sometimes people can't sleep because they think too much. This is an example in Ayurveda of a vata imbalance. So Mercury rules all of these things. So Mercury is going from Leo in the sky to Virgo. Virgo is Mercury's sign of exaltation. A planet is exalted in only one sign out of 12. The signs are Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Cancer, Leo, etc. So a planet can only be exalted in one sign out of 12. Mercury's exaltation sign is Virgo. Exalted is as it sounds. That planet has reached the pinnacle of its strength to deliver its benefits in full measure. If you are born with an exalted planet, you are a very, very fortunate soul. If you are born with two exalted planets, you are doubly fortunate. If you are born with three exalted planets, you are especially fortunate. Four, five, six, well, then I bow at your feet, because then you are almost a manifestation of the Godhead on Earth. And the higher beings would all have very, very high states.
You mean in one?
In the Kundalini.
In one house, you mean?
Yeah, no, each planet. Not in one house.
Uh-huh.
Each sign. See, a sun is exalted in Aries.
Okay.
And moon is exalted in Taurus.
Uh-huh. Right.
And Mercury is exalted in Virgo. And Jupiter is exalted in Cancer. So, you know, like this. So that's, the more exalted planets, the higher the soul. Uh-huh. The higher the being. Kalindi has been fortunate enough to discover a horse, which I think she's on the verge of acquiring, that has six exalted planets. So, and he's crossed the road. That horse, Ram. Ram. Yeah, we changed his name. It's called Rocco, and we figured we didn't need an Italian gangster in the family, so we changed it to Ram. So Mercury in Virgo. Now I'm not sure how long it's there for. It's going to be there for 3 or 4 weeks. So if you need to put together a contract, agreement, business deal. If you want to sign a lease, a purchase, a mortgage. If you need to sit down with somebody and resolve a conflict that is there because of a lack of communication or a miscommunication, that might be a good time to do that while Mercury is in Virgo. People who are born with Mercury exalted in Virgo are really, really smart people. Very intelligent people. I thought what we would do today is talk a little bit about, we haven't looked at the Bhagavad Gita for some time. So I was going to look at the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. As you know, the Bhagavad Gita is the song of God. It is the conversation between Krishna and Arjuna. Krishna was on the planet some 5,000 years ago. And I'm not going to tell the long story. The short story is there was a war between, it's always the forces of good versus evil. So it was between the Pandavas, who were the good side of the family, and the Kauravas, who were the, shall we say, self-centered side of the family. And the Kauravas tricked the Pandavas out of their kingdom by cheating at gambling. Gambling's difficult enough as it is, but when you get cheated, then it becomes even more difficult. So, even in the face of much diplomacy, the war could not be prevented. And that war is called the Battle of Kurukshetra. So, the Bhagavad Gita was spoken by Krishna to Arjuna just before the battle began. And this is really the essence of yoga philosophy. It describes the entire system of yoga and all the various branches or methods of yoga that one can pursue. Yoga means
union.
In this case, union with whom? With God. Where the soul becomes united or unified with God or with the divine plan. That's what yoga is, simply. So there's the entire science of yoga right there. And as we've discussed on many occasions, if you can't focus on God entirely all day long every day, then he says, then do this. If that's too hard, do this. If that's too hard, do this. If that's too hard, do this. He gives all the different steps. You know, I can't focus on God, well then study. Oh, I can't study, well then work for God. Or offer a little something, a fruit, a flower. Everybody can do something. And the other thing we've talked about repeatedly is mostly when people pray to God, they say, "Dear Lord, here's my list. I need this. I want you to do that. I need you to help me here. You need to help my family members. Why did you let that happen to me? Change this, change that." There's a list of desires that they have. Anything wrong with that? Not necessarily. Whoever asks God what you can do for him, that's the attitude you must try to cultivate. Pardon me, try to develop. What can I do for you? What do you need? What do you need me to do? How can I serve you? I can figure out all kinds of ways for you to serve me. How can I serve you? When you actually begin to develop this attitude, your life will begin to transform magically, wonderfully. Your stress, worry, anxiety will begin to dissipate. And you will begin to see things in their proper perspective, rather than feeling like you're underneath a big pile of problems. You will surmount those problems and you will be above and looking down, which is the proper perspective. So let us look. I'm going to go through the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is about the difference between the soul and material nature. So Arjuna, who was a prince, who was supposed to fight this war, was having a hard time committing himself to the battle because his relatives were on the opposing side. So Arjuna said, "My dear Krishna, I wish to know about nature, Prakriti, and Purusha, the enjoyer." Nature, Prakriti, and Purusha, the enjoyer. I wish to know about the field and the knower of the field and knowledge and the end of knowledge. The Blessed Lord said, "This body, O son of Kunti, is called the field. One who knows this body is called the knower of the field." So the body is the kshetra, field of activities. The knower of the field is the kshetra. Gya means knower. And where is the knower of the field? It's you. You're the knower of the field inside the body. You have consciousness of everything. Well, perhaps not everything, but most everything that goes on in your body, you're aware of it. You know how you feel, your emotional state. You know what thoughts are going through your mind. You know if you have aches and pains. You know what gives you pleasure. You know your favorite color. You know your favorite music. so many things. That's the knower of the field. I don't know that about you unless you tell me, because I am not the knower of your field. You should understand that I am also the knower, that I am also the knower in all bodies, Krishna says. And to understand this body and its owner, that is knowledge. This is my opinion. God is also the knower in your body. God knows what's going on with you. You are under the belief or under the conclusion that if you pray to God, that is, if you believe in God, if you pray to God, He'll hear you. Correct? We believe this, and He will. Well, how can He hear you? Because you're not even praying out loud. Because He's within the body. We've given this example many times in the Upanishads. It said that there are two birds sitting in a tree. And one bird is busy enjoying the fruits. And the other bird is sitting silently as witness, watching the bird who's doing all the enjoying. The bird doing all the enjoying is the Atma, or soul, in the body. That's you. The other bird is the super soul, the Parama Atma, who is simply watching what you're doing. It says nothing. Waiting for you to turn your attention to Him and begin the relationship. But you're too busy, usually, doing other things. Most of us are. So He sits quietly. Soul, super soul. So God has a consciousness of all bodies. We have a consciousness of our own body, and God has a consciousness of all bodies. That's the difference. One of the differences. So Krishna continues, "Now please hear my brief description of this field of activity, how it is constituted, what its changes are, whence it is produced, and who that knower of the field of activities is, and what his influences are. That knowledge of the field of activities and of the knower of activities is described by various sages in Vedic writings, especially in the Vedanta Sutra, and is presented with all reason as to cause and effect." Okay. Here's the field of activities. The five great elements, plus false ego or ego, intelligence, the unmanifest, the ten senses, the mind, the five sense objects, attraction, aversion, happiness, distress, attraction, aversion, happiness, distress, the aggregate of everything, life symptoms and convictions. All of these are considered to be the field of activities. The five great elements, what are they? Bhumirappannalovayu kammano buddhirevacha. What are they? Go ahead.
Fire, water, air, ether.
Fire, water, air, ether, and? What are we missing?
Water, fire, air, ether.
Earth, water, fire, air, ether. That's it. Okay. The ten senses is, like ears, hearing, nose, smelling, tongue, tasting, fingers, touching,
eyes
seeing.
Yeah, what are the other five, though?
Then there are the five senses for acquiring knowledge: eyes, ears, nose, tongue, touch. The five working senses: voice, legs, hands, anus, genitals. There it is. No. And if you're missing any of those, you got a problem. You need them all. Okay. Now he goes on to talk about He's going to list a whole bunch of things, and then at the end he's going to say, all these I declare to be knowledge. And what is contrary to these is ignorance. So what is knowledge? Humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a guru, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of the senses. Understand what that means? Absence of ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, non-attachment to family, home, nationality, country, etc. It's a hard one for most humans, especially during the Olympics when you're supposed to be waving the flag. Even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events. Constant and unalloyed devotion to God. Resorting to solitary places, Anthony, like Bahana, where we live. Detachment from the general mass of people. Accepting the importance of self-realization and the philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge, and their opposite is ignorance. It's an interesting standard of performance. So most of these are fairly straightforward, so let's comment on a couple. One of them is approaching a spiritual master or a guru. Do you need a guru? You don't need a guru if you can hear what God is saying in your heart. If your channel of communication with the Paramatma, the Supersoul in your heart, is clear and without doubt, then maybe you don't need a teacher. Renunciation of the objects of sense gratification. Does it mean to say that you can't enjoy yourself? There is a certain amount of enjoyment that a living being is expected to have. It's not so much about enjoying yourself, it's about being attached and not being able to let go of the enjoyment. That's why it's always good to stop doing things. Like, for example, if you fast once a week, or if you fast twice a month, then that will reduce your dependence and your attachment to eating, to food. You can do the same thing with sex. Whatever it is that you're particularly attached to, especially, it's good to give it up on a regular basis.
What about thinking?
It's good to give that up too. It's good to give that up too. Yeah. Well, thinking's overrated.
Yeah.
You know. You can get to God using your brain by thinking, but that won't necessarily develop love. I was struck, the first time I ever went to India, I went to Vrindavan, and I went to some of the famous temples in Vrindavan. And I was very young. And, you know, I had a little bit of knowledge. You know what they say about a little bit of knowledge? It's a dangerous thing. Because as soon as you start on the spiritual path, and I'm sure you've experienced this yourself, then you see you've made some advancement, and then right away, you know, you start thinking, oh, I made some advancement. And I saw little old ladies standing in front of the deity of God, the murti, the statue in the temple, with, and they wouldn't have been well educated. They would have been very simple. They wouldn't have known as much as I would have known from a book, you know. But the devotion pouring out of them was overwhelming. You could feel it. It was tangible, you know. It was all about the heart. You know, these were simple people. You can be the simplest person in the world and become God conscious. This is the wonderful thing about it. You know, a lot of times the more intelligent we are, the more pitfalls we can fall into, the more holes we can fall into, because we think too much, and then we think we know too much. It can be, it's not always a blessing. Perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease. Well, why would that be bad? We're here, we're enjoying ourselves. Isn't life grand? Yeah, at times. But we have to realize that if we're in a world where birth, death, old age, disease, suffering are standard, everybody experiences them, then it must give us pause to think about whether this is our ultimate destination. Because none of us want these things. We don't want to grow old. We don't want to die. Most of us don't remember what the birth process was like when they squeezed your head through a little canal and you came out screaming for good reason. And suffering and disease. Because everybody experiences this on some level. These are not good things. And we should try to get out of this. Get off the hamster wheel.
I think above all, repeated. The greed for materialistic thing, like the way you always want more and
yeah.
more and more.
Yeah, it never ends.
You're never happy that way.
Yeah.
Absence of ego. Whenever you need recognition or whenever you slip into self-importance at the expense of others, that's ego. And that is a major pitfall. Then it also says non-attachment to home, family, nationality, country. Well, you don't hear this very often. Where do you hear that? It's not that you shouldn't love your family or be responsible or look after your family. It's that this lifetime is like a grain of sand on a beach, because there are so many lifetimes. So you have to take it in perspective. The more you are attached to people, places, and circumstances here on the earth, you are guaranteed to get another birth. There is no doubt you will get another birth. So we must learn to love without attachment. Pretty much every war that's ever taken place has been over a boundary line. There are no boundary lines on the earth as we see it from satellite photography. None of those boundary lines are there. So somebody draws a boundary, an arbitrary boundary, and now this is this country, this is a different country. I love my country, I hate your country, and off we go. Why do you think they have these Olympics? This Olympics is a great idea. Because they want to wave their flag and say how great their country is, and no one's getting killed. They can have a competition. They can have winners. They can have losers. They can have different grades of performances. No one dies. This is a great invention. And it's all about waving the flag. What's so special about being born in a particular part of the world? From a spiritual perspective, well, you blew it again. Here you are, you're back. That's really what it amounts to. So we must learn detachment.
Surely this is the toughest of the lot, that one there. You know, a relationship with somebody, true love, and not getting, you know, attached.
Oh, yeah, well,
it's got to be the hardest.
Of course it is.
One down here. I mean, how do you even approach it, you know?
Well, let me ask you how you approach it. You're a music professor. You have many students. You have private students, and then you have students in your classroom. Some of your students are outstanding persons or performers, correct? Some of them you'll develop a strong attachment for. You enjoy spending time with them. You enjoy teaching them. They become special in your life. And then they graduate. How do you deal with it?
I suppose you see that the time limit, you see that, you know, there will be a time this is over. So you just enjoy it for the time that's there. And I would apply that to personal relationships, definitely. But there's a role play here where I must remain detached to a certain extent because I've got a responsibility as a mentor. And I feel that in a personal relationship, like a private relationship, be it family or your chosen one, it's going to be tougher because I don't see myself as having a role, you know.
Okay, so I'm...
here you see the other person as a soul rather than a person. And then if you see them as a soul, their highest well-being is what you find most important.
Okay.
And that sort of creates the detachment.
Okay,
that's
kind of
the best way I would describe it.
See, if... I mean, it's an excellent question. The first thing I would say to you is use this same philosophy that you just described to me with your students on the other people in your life.
Okay.
But we humans, see people and circumstances in our lives as serving us. Well, I'm with this person because they make me happy. This one cooks for me. This one gives me sex. This one I play tennis with. This one I ride horses with. This one gave me a house. True. You know, this one makes me crazy. Whatever it might be. So it's always about what am I getting out of this? Which then, you know, opens up a whole other can of unconditional love, conditional love, that's another thing. So if you start seeing the soul, as Kalindi is saying, within the other person, and if you can begin to see that person as a soul, not a body, not a person here to serve you, and how can you help that soul? What is your highest duty? Your highest duty in the world is somehow to help that soul in their journey toward enlightenment. Period. That's your highest duty. Whether that soul even realizes that that's important or not.
Like the woman you were saying today, on her deathbed, maybe you should tell that person.
There was a Western guy who went to India and learned about yoga and Indian philosophy. And he became a devotee of Krishna. And he then would speak. His mother was a socialite, very wealthy socialite. And she went to all the parties and, you know, I guess he was an American. I don't know where he's from, to be honest. And he would have many conversations with her about Krishna. He was trying to help her to understand why he had taken to yoga and Eastern philosophy, and who Krishna was, and Krishna was God, and you should try to think of Krishna, and you should try to worship Krishna, and chant his names, right? So, next thing you know, she's on her deathbed. And he's sitting beside her. And she looks over at him, she says, where is your Krishna now? And then dies.
She dies.
She looks at him, she goes, where is your Krishna now? And she expires. So the last thing she thought of before she died was Krishna. Which, according to Bhagavad Gita, whatever you think of at death, that's where you go. Your last thought, the thing you're focused on when you die, that's your destination. Whatever you're most attached to. Even she wasn't attached to Krishna emotionally. We can probably say that safely. But that was her dying thought. So all those conversations that they had had together, that's the result that it had. And she remembered that at her.
Yeah, he really helped that soul.
So that's soul, at the very least, that soul's all the negative karmic reaction is wiped away. If you become self-realized in this lifetime, during this lifetime, at the end of your life, which means you do not have to come back to the material world and take another body. No more samsara. It means that if you want to do your family a favor, 7 generations of your family before and after become liberated. Liberated, I believe, means that all of their negative karma gets wiped away. Wiped away. 7 generations of the family before and after. So that's the highest welfare work that you could do for your family. I don't know what will happen with me and in my life, but my pursuit of spirituality and my spiritual path from the age of 19 was the thing that made my mother crazy. I mean, not literally, well, so-so, but my mother hated it, despised the fact that I was on a spiritual path, and took every opportunity to criticize me, every opportunity. So if somehow or other I would become self-realized at the end of my life, she would get the benefit, despite her disagreement, you know.
They even sent him to a psychiatrist, but the psychiatrist was an Indian.
But no, that was not my mother. That was my first wife's mother, my mother-in-law. We went back home to visit. She says, Drew, I'd really like you to do me a favor. Mm-hmm. I said, what would you like? I would like you to visit a psychiatrist. I said, oh, okay. I was swallowing all my anger. I said, oh, and why would you like me to do that? Well, just to make sure that, you know, mentally, you know, you're okay. Just want to make sure everything's okay. So I said, yes. And I went and I met, Dr. Sharma, psychiatrist. This is in Canada. And he says, very nice man, how are you? I said, yeah, fine. He said, so what are you doing? I said, I'm practicing yoga. Oh, yes. I said, I'm reading Bhagavad Gita. Oh, very nice. Very good. First class. So we talked about God, yoga, self-realization, Krishna, you know. And then we finished in 50 minutes. And he said, very, very pleased to have met you. And I said, well, very nice to have met you. I said, so, what's the verdict? He says, what do you mean? I said, well, am I crazy? Or, I mean, am I certified? Or what are you going to... Go on. Have a nice day. Yeah, that did happen. I forgot about that. Okay, so... even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events. Not always easy to do. All right, let's move on. I shall now explain, this is Krishna continuing, I shall now explain the knowable, knowing which you will taste the eternal. This is beginningless. It is called Brahman, spirit. Brahman means spirit. And it lies beyond the cause and effect of the material world. We've talked many times, according to Vedic understanding, yoga philosophy, God is realized in three forms. Vadanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yajjnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdiyate. So God is known in three forms. In Christianity, especially Catholicism, we say God is realized in three forms. And what do? You go into the church and you go, God the Father, this is Bhagavan, in the name of Bhagavan, and the Paramatma, the Son, and the Parabrahman. Amen. Om. Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. So Brahman is that which pervades everything. Spirit, Holy Ghost. The Son means Paramatma, God in the heart of each and every being, every entity. Just humans? No. Blade of grass? God in there? Mm-hmm. Yes. Everywhere. That's the Son. Son meaning children of God. Who's not a child? Jesus Christ, the only begotten Son of God. See, there's something wrong with that. Because that's not true. That's flat out untrue. If he's the only begotten Son of God, where does that leave you and me? Who are we? The bastard children of the... of Mary Magdalene? Of
Adam and Eve.
Adam and Eve. Cain and Abel. No, we are the children of God. And then Bhagavan means God the Father. God in all of his. Bhaga means opulences, gifts, qualities. Aishvaryasya samagrasya virayasya yashasya shriya jnana vairagya yoschapi shanambhagi tingana. God has six. How do you know God? He's got six qualities in full measure. You have some of these qualities, but not in full measure. If you are Bhagavan, you have them all. Full measure. Wealth. Wealthiest guy in the universe. Power, but power you could also read as talent, ability. Fame. Who's the most famous? God. Shri, beauty. Beauty. Jnana, knowledge. And vairagya, detachment. Any human being that has any of these qualities developed to to any degree is worshipped by everybody else. That's a fact. That's a fact. If you go into the news agent right now and you look at the magazines on the stand, you will find on the cover of every one of those magazines somebody who has one of these six opulences developed to a high degree, and that's why their picture is on the cover. That's a fact. Okay. Everywhere, returning now, Krishna says, everywhere are his hands and legs, his eyes and faces. He hears everything. In this way, the super soul exists, Paramatma. The super soul is the original source of all senses, yet he is without senses. Well, they're saying super soul, this is also Brahman, or spirit. The spirit is not known, is to be not an embodied form, but an energetic form. He is unattached, although he is the maintainer of all living beings. He transcends the modes of nature, and at the same time, he is the master of the modes of nature. The Supreme Truth exists both internally and externally, in the moving and the non-moving beings. He is beyond the power of the material senses to see or to know. When you are a human being, I don't care how bright you are, you may have a PhD, you may have two PhDs, and you're a finite being, and you're trying to grasp the infinite. How do you do that with your brilliant brain? If a little ant was at your feet and he's looking up at you and he's trying to understand you in your complexity, it's a joke, right? It's laughable. How's this ant going to know you? In fact, it wouldn't even occur to him, right? That's kind of like us trying to understand God. So there are two processes for understanding God. One is called the ascending process, which means from your point of view, up, trying to wrap your mind around something that is way beyond your mind. That's the ascending process. The descending process comes from God down to you. Okay, you're really a nice person. You're trying real hard. You're very devoted. And you treat other people with kindness. Here, let me give this to you. And you get a realization. You get a revelation. You get an epiphany. You get blown open with knowledge. That's the descending process. If you have a relationship with God, that's what will happen. You'll be given this out of love, out of kindness, out of joy. What do you want to give the person you love? Whatever they want, don't you? You want to give them the things they want the most. And when you give it to them, it causes you the greatest joy. Does not giving actually cause the greatest joy when you give to somebody you love? Is it not more satisfying than receiving? It is, when you see the effect it has on them. Do you think it's not the same with him?
You say a lot of people get it, but don't give.
Oh, I think, well, I mean, if you mean that people take things for granted, well, then absolutely, mm-hmm. You know.
Gratitude is important.
Gratitude is essential. It's essential. But, you don't have to work so hard. In other words, it's not all on you to figure it all out. You know. What might be a good example? Suppose you work at a huge corporation and you work in the factory, but your greatest desire is to meet the chief executive officer of the corporation. You want to meet the number one man. Well, guess what? He's probably not going to take a meeting with you, even if you ask for one. But if you become an excellent worker and you rise up through the ranks and you're focused on doing the best job you can and you become such an asset to this company that at some point he's going to seek you out and want to meet you. And he's, I heard all about you. You know, I hear you're just a wonderful employee and you came up with these great ideas and you've increased our profits and our production and it's such a pleasure to meet you. Can I offer you a different job? What kind of job would you like? Let me create a position for you. Do these things happen in companies? Yes, they do. So, in other words, don't try to get to meet God. Get God to notice you. Descending process. Continuing. The Supreme Truth exists... No, I said that. Although the Supersoul appears to be divided, he is never divided. He is situated as one. Although he is the maintainer of every living entity, it is to be understood that he devours and develops all. He brings an end to your life and he gives you a new life or develops you during life. He's the source of light in all luminous objects. He is beyond the darkness of matter and is at times unmanifest. Brahman is unmanifest. When you cannot see God face to face, if you're not that advanced where you can't see him face to face, can you feel him? Can you feel that energy? You feel that spirituality. Sometimes you go into the mandir, into the temple, you will feel God. But you don't have to go into the temple. Or you can feel God anywhere, anytime, any place. Driving down the street. Oftentimes, Kalindi and I will drive down the street. Lots of times this happens. And I look over and I go, boy, I just have this sense of well-being today. She goes, she looks at me and she goes, because she's feeling the exact same thing I am. For no particular reason. It's just some days are like that. You know, and you just feel connected. And you, we're all on the wavelength. And then other days, no matter how hard you try, it doesn't happen. You know, you wish that the day would be over. But God can be felt. Can be experienced. He is the source of light. Okay, so that he is knowledge. He is the object of knowledge. He is the goal of knowledge. Knowledge, the object of knowledge, the goal of knowledge. And he is situated in everyone's heart. Thus, the field of activities, which is the body, knowledge and the knowable have been summarily described by me. Only those who are devoted to me can understand this thoroughly and thus attain my nature. In the Bhagavad Gita, it explains many systems of yoga. But he always says, but if you're devoted to me, don't worry about all that. I'll give it to you. I'll give you all this. So what's he saying? You know, if you have love in your heart, don't worry about all these technical things, technical practices, and staring at the tip of your nose. Yeah, you can do that if you want. You can do yoga asanas. You can do pranayama, breath control. These things are fine. But he says, but if you just learn to love me, don't worry about all that stuff. I'll give you the results of all that because of your love and devotion. Isn't that how you treat people you love? Don't you do special things for people you love? Does anybody have to prompt you to do that? No. So guess where you learned that? Okay.
So are you saying there's no point in doing yoga then?
No, I'm not saying that. Because different people will be comfortable doing different kinds of practices. There's so many types of people that certain practices are of value to them. Some people will never want to follow the path of bhakti or love and devotion. They think that's not serious. They think jnana is the path, cultivation of knowledge, or they think yoga is the path where you develop mystic powers, siddhis. It depends what you like, you know. Not everybody will be the same. Yoga, strictly speaking, yoga asanas or postures, according to the yoga system, are done solely so you can sit for long hours in meditation. But we think it's for weight loss and good looks. That's what we think yoga is for. Yeah? To get into shape, get fit, and lose weight. No, it's not. Nature, continuing. Nature is said to be the cause of all material activities and effects. Nature. Whereas the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in this world. Oh. I thought it was someone else's fault. What are you saying? It's my fault? What I'm going through is I'm the cause of it all? Oh, that's a big revelation for a lot of people. Yes, we're the cause. You know, first thing, as soon as something happens that's bad, causes pain and suffering, how dare you? After all I've done for you. You saw me at church. How many years have I gone to church? You know, how much money have I given? And you do this to me? That's no gratitude. Huh? Do people do this? All the time. It's his fault. How can there be such a thing as a just and fair God when he let this happen? There's no such thing as a just and fair God. Oh, wait a second. The living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments. Look no further. The mirror. Yes, we can't remember because we don't remember what we did in a past lifetime. It's a tragedy. We see a small child killed or something terrible happens to a small child and we say, oh, the poor thing, that innocent child, how dare they do this to this poor innocent child? Got news for you. That is not an innocent soul. Even though in this lifetime, maybe he has done something in a previous lifetime to create the reaction that he's experiencing. This is a fact. We don't know what that is, and it does appear a tragedy, no doubt.
The parents need to go through it as well?
Well, the parents go through it as well, you know. But, you know, don't go blaming God. Because in this world, this is the world of cause and effect. Action, reaction. How many times do you say to people, oh, you know, what goes around comes around. Oh, really? You believe that? Well, if you believe that, then why don't you grasp this circumstance? Because it's true. What goes around comes around. You know that. But we somehow can't make it go from beyond one lifetime. Why can't it be two lifetimes or three or 1,000? You know, if we would understand karma and reincarnation, you know how much more easy our lives would be if we could just grasp these two simple concepts, karma and reincarnation. Okay. All right. We can go on, but I think we're going to leave that there. And we'll leave us with the responsibility of our own actions, which I know to most of you is perfectly acceptable, but would be a major revelation to many others. So, in honor of Krishna's birthday on Saturday, I'm going to introduce this mantra. We have actually done this mantra before. That's this page. So I'm going to begin where it says benefits of chanting this mantra. Upon emerging from the lotus which sprung from the navel of Vishnu, Brahma, the creator, who was guided from within by divine inspiration, turned his mind to the creation under the impulse of previous impressions. But he could see nothing but darkness in every direction. Brahma's impulse for creation arises solely from the impressions recorded in his previous birth. All souls, or jivas, derive their nature from the impressions recorded from their previous births, and this affords them a starting point at which to begin their new life. This is the result of their actions in previous lifetimes. So too, it is the same for the creator, Brahma. The position of creator within a universe is a position that a qualified soul can attain by virtue of his or her pious and saintly activities over a period of lifetimes. Brahma saw nothing but darkness in all directions. He knew he had to create diversity within the universe, but he did not know how he would do this. Then his consort, Saraswati, the goddess of learning, said to him, quote, "By this mantra, all of your desires shall be fulfilled. O Brahma, this mantra will bring you direct association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. And from this, all your desires shall be fulfilled." End quote. This mantra has a twofold purpose. For a person who is still focused on fulfilling material desires, this mantra is the supreme mantra for creative fulfillment and realization. For a pure soul who no longer strives for the fulfillment of any material desires, this mantra will bring him into direct contact with Vishnu. Vishnu is the formal form of God, or Krishna, the familiar form of God. And he will be able to transcend samsara, or the wheel of repeated birth and death. He will be awarded an eternal place in the spiritual world, Vaikuntha, with Krishna or Vishnu. So, that's what's on offer. Okay, with this mantra. If it was good enough for Brahma, and with this mantra he created the creation, should be able to get yourself at least a new house. Or purify your desires, depending. Okay? So this is actually part of the Gayatri, Krishna Gayatri mantra. Kling Krishnaya Govindaya Gopi Janavalabhaya Swaha. So repeat after me, please. Kling. Now it's pronounced klim, but you don't. I mean, it's written klim, but you don't say that. You say kling, like holding on, right? Kling, kling. Krishnaya, Govindaya, Gopi Janna, Vallabhaya, Swaha. Kling Krishnaya, Govindaya, Gopi Janna, Vallabhaya, Swaha. Okay, let's do it together.
Kling Krishnaya Govindaya Gopi Janna Vallabhaya Swaha. Kling Krishnaya Govindaya Gopi Janna Vallabhaya Swaha. Kling Krishnaya Govindaya Gopi Janna Vallabhaya Swaha. Let's do it softly. Kling Krishnaya Govindaya Gopi Janna Vallabhaya Swaha. Okay, so that is the mantra. If you like, you can use the mala, the chanting beads. Kling Krishnaya Govindaya Gopi Janna Vallabhaya Swaha. Kling Krishnaya Govindaya Gopi Janna Vallabhaya Swaha. And you can go around the beads if you like, or you can close your eyes and go into a deep state of meditation and chant this mantra. I assure you, this mantra is very, very powerful, very dynamic, and it will rapidly give the result that you're looking for.
How many times did you say it?
Well, I mean, the best way to do mantra, I mean, unless you're doing meditation where you're closing your eyes and just slowly meditating on the mantra, if you're doing a vrata or a vow, then you want to say, I'm going to do a minimum of one mala a day, or two, or three, or four, or five, however many, and you do the same every day. So I'm going to do three malas, that means three times around, every day of this mantra. And I will do it for how long? 1 year? Or you do so many thousands? You know, I was asked to do a mantra one time. I was given a mantra that Om Shri Govindaya Nama, and I was told to do it 100,000 times, and I did it. Took a year. I'm about to go into a Rahu period, and you're to do the Rahu mantra 18,000 times. So I did that in March and April. No, not that one. I did Ardhakaya Mahaviryam Chandraditya Vimardhanam Singhika Garbha Sambhutam Tam Rahum Pranamamyam. He knows the same mantra. So that's how you do it. You know, I mean, you don't have to do 100 times, but say, even you say, I will do five malas every day for 1 month. Something you can do. Don't pick something you cannot do. Don't pick something you will fail at. That's not good. It's not good psychologically, and it's not good spiritually. I mean, God will not get mad at you. But if you say you're going to do something, then you should do it and not do it. But if you do decide to do this and do a vrat, then please, I want to know. We want to know. Does anybody want?
You did that one before, didn't you?
I'm doing this one. I'm still doing this. I've been doing this one for this mantra for the past 3 years.
Can you make it shorter, or have you sense to be that way? You know the way you abbreviate sometimes?
But that's no. That's pretty short. You know.
Okay. How do we know? Like, say we've been doing other sort of mantras, and like I have a certain number I like in my mind.
Yeah.
I've been asking for a long time. But how do I know that if I start this, that it's not a accumulation of other mantras?
You don't know. You don't know.
But this you can't start it.
Well, yeah. There's a verse in the Bhagavad Purana, Akama Sarvakamova Mokshakama Udaradi Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purusham Param. That akama, if you have no desires, sarvakama, if you're riddled with desires, moksha kama, or if your desire is for liberation, that you never take birth again, no matter what your state is, one should worship God for whatever the desires may be, with tivrena bhakti yogena, with very intense tivra, intense devotion. Be intent. Anything you achieve in the material world, you're usually intent, right? Convinced, convicted. You won't take no for an answer. And then the universe goes, oh, okay, here.
Which means the pronunciation is very important.
Yeah. Well, the pronunciation is important, but they're not going to.
Attention.
They're not going to reject you if you're not perfect.
No, it's not he said it before. Devotion is the main thing. If you have a belief into it and devoted, it comes naturally. Then again, you need to be. Somebody say that, he said, sometimes the people say, maybe somebody in India and he's a priest in the temple and he knows maybe 10 times more than about him, but he's in the. I am the one, right? I know everything, right? But it's nothing. Where you over here, right? And you have nothing. You say, I'm going to try. I believe it. What do you say that? I'm going to chant it this. But maybe you have more power. Mm-hmm. And God say that. He is the one, like,
Yeah, it's the devotion.
Yeah. It's the love.
When you are teaching your child the alphabet, A, B, C, D, and then the child's in the process of learning alphabet, stumbles through the whole thing, gets half of them wrong or mispronounced. What do you say to him? Wonderful, perfect, this is great, because he's trying. He's made all kinds of mistakes. Who cares? You don't care about the mistakes. He'll change. It'll get better. Now, we want to make this announcement so we don't forget. There is this gentleman, Dr. Markus Schmicke, who is German. He's from Berlin. And he has studied in India with many masters. He is a Vastu or Vasati practitioner. Vastu is the Vedic version of feng shui, but feng shui comes from Vastu. So I interviewed him for my radio show a couple weeks ago. We've had his book for I don't know how many years. Here's the book. Please pass that around. And very, very good soul, very spiritual man, does his practice. How did he say to me? He said he was told by one of the Indian Vasati or Stapatis that in order to study Vastu, you must have 4 qualifications, if I could remember. You must believe in God. Oh yeah, you must believe in God. You must have respect for the demigods. Angels. Archangels, demigods. You must have a sadhana. You must have a spiritual practice that you do every day. And you must know Jyotish. You must know Vedic astrology. Those are the 4 qualifications.
So believe in God, astrology.
Believe in God, have respect for the devas. Perform sadhana, regular. And no Jyotish. So he is coming over and he's going to speak September 4th. And then here in the Still Oregon, which is nearby. We got this hotel today, we have a conference room. And we're only asking 10 euros only to cover the cost of the room we're renting. That's all. So it's no money making proposition. He'll speak for a couple of hours. And then he's going, the next couple of days, he's going to see people privately. So if you're planning to build a home and you want a Vastu home, the Vastu tradition is were all the temples and palaces in India that are still standing today. Some of them hundreds of years old are built according to Vastu principle. The Mayan architecture in South America is built according to Vastu principle, the Mayan pyramids. There are two sources of Vastu. Vishvakarma was the deva, or the godly being of the universe, and Maya Danava was the who built the cities, the fabulous cities of the demons, the darker forces like Lanka. So Maya Danava, that's his name, was the guy whose principles built the Mayan architecture in Central and South America. Well, no, I'm not saying anything like that, but both of these systems are extant, and these methods of architecture and spatial relationships. And what are the three levels of it, Kalindi?
Geometric, karmic, and...
energetic. So three things. It's the geometric. Everything's measured very carefully. And it has to have an alignment. It has to have an alignment with the directions. East, north, south, west. Energetic. Each room has to create a certain energy. Each room of the nine spaces, you have to have the central part being the Brahmastan, empty. That's where Brahma, that's where God resides. And each of the other ones are ruled by the different planets. And so the energetic, and then the karmic level. So if everything's built harmoniously, you should not get sick. You should have no financial problems. You should get along with your wife, with your husband, with your children. Everything will be conducive to harmony and balance, health, joy, prosperity in your life.
Geopathical stress is very related to this thing as well.
So, take advantage. As Kalini told you last week, the fires in Malibu, they have fires, lots in Malibu. I lived there for 20 years in LA. And there are several Vastu homes built in Malibu. And the fires consumed all these houses, and they go right up to the little fence around the Vastu home and not touch anything. They burn all the houses around. None of these Vastu houses were. All right. Close your eyes. Close your eyes. Breathe. Relax. Deeply, deeply relax. Breathe and let go. Turn the light on. Breathe. And let go. Allow the stress, tension, fear, and apprehension to drain from your body. Totally, completely relax. Breathe and let go. High above, a beautiful beam of radiant pearl-white light comes down, down, all the way down from the heavens, entering through the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms, legs, out the bottom of your feet or your base chakra and into the earth below. Relax deeply, deeply relax. See and feel yourself by means of this light connected to the heavens above and grounded in the earth below. Breathe, relax. let go. All right. See yourself in a very beautiful place. It might be nature. It might be a temple. It might be a palace. Wherever. See yourself there. Now, what is it that you need to create? I don't want you to think in your head with your brain. I want you to feel. What do you need to create in your life? Don't go through your list. Just feel what seems to be most important for you to create in your life. What is it? Now, create that in front of you now. See that thing or circumstance. Create it and fully formed in front of you now. What is it like? How does it impact your life? What does it feel like? How does it change things? Is your life now better? Is it the same? Is it worse? What is the result of having created this circumstance? Now, if you feel it is good and worth having, worth creating, then take this thing you have created and shrink it down smaller, 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 until it fits in the palm of your hand. Smaller still. Now, place it in your heart. Right inside your heart. The place of its origin. So it is ready for you to take out and manifest whenever you want. Continue with the meditation until you've completed the steps. When you've completed the steps, slowly returning to consciousness, awakening, feeling refreshed, relaxed, and at peace. And when you're ready, open your eyes. Very good. All right. So, thank you. Krishna's birthday is on Saturday. Great day. I kept saying Saturday. Saturday in America. Sunday. It's Sunday, actually. It's Sunday. So, fasting, prayer, mantras, chanting, acts of kindness.
And I was going to go and have an Indian takeaway.
Well, you can still have an Indian takeaway.
So that a good one to chant on
his... Oh, yeah, that'd be a good one. Absolutely. Thank you. And I guess VG has a very nice prasadam surprise for us. So...